Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, well, welcome to a brand new Hotspurs podcast. It is Tuesday, the 8th of June, 2021. I am Steve in Leigh-on-Sea and Essex. And on today's My Spurs Journey, we have got the one and only Bardi. How you doing, Bardi?
Hey, Steve. I'm great. I'm very happy to be on this podcast. I've been a long-time listener, so I've always wanted to come on and have a chat with you. So it's great to be here.
Ah, oh, lovely. Great to hear. I didn't think any other podcasters listened to the show. So there we go. I've got one.
No, Ricky and I are fans. And after he was on, I was just like, no, I need to get on as well.
You're only the second person ever to ask to come on. The other one was Anthony Costa from Blue.
Yeah. And my government first name is Anthony, so there must be something you're doing right to that crowd.
There you go, exclusive, world exclusive. Yeah. Bardi isn't his real name. It's Anthony Lombardi. Fantastic. Well, let's get straight into that. So, obviously, yeah. Italian. Mm. Whereabouts?
Well, I'm from North London, born and bred, proper North London. But my dad came over from Carrara, which is in Tuscany, in the 70s. So, so he's been here since the 70s and he's been a big footballing influence on me, but he was never he never forced me to pick a club side. Okay. So he left that down to me and the fates of God, and they delivered me Tottenham Hotspur. And, yeah.
There is no God.
He often shakes his head at me and says, why did you do that? And I was like, well, I needed guidance from you. Like you've done with your son, you've guided your son towards Tottenham. You left me to pick my own, and the kind of person I am, who's always attracted to a little bit of misery, I picked Tottenham Hotspur.
Well, this must have been before Vialli and people like that joined Chelsea, right?
Yeah, way before. This was, I started Sports Spurs in 89, so it was a combination of Paul Allen, Chris Waddle and Gazza that got me towards Spurs. But I do have to admit, when Chelsea got a little bit cosmopolitan at that time with Hullet and Vialli and then Zola, I was looking enviously at them going, that'd be quite nice. But, you know, you can't change them.
The little Italian around the corner from us where I was growing up was like always, Juventus and Milan and everything. And then as soon as Chelsea got Vialli and Zola and that lot, started putting up all Chelsea pictures around this Italian restaurant. And they're like diehard Chelsea fans all of a sudden. Yeah, cheers for that. Right. So brilliant. Well, let's educate the listeners a little bit more. Although we are a relatively high educated listener base. Mm. And we get into your podcast in a minute, which, I don't want to be too controversial, but, you know, the bar is slightly lower when it comes to the old IQ. I'm only joking. Your podcasts are for everyone. Mine are just for the clients. That's what I always say. So Tuscany, whereabouts is that? And what's the nearest team to Tuscany?
So it's the northern part of Italy. It's west coast, just south of Genoa. The local team is Fiorentina. So that was who my dad grew up supporting. He was never really an ultra, but he would travel to watch Fiorentina back in those days. But then he became very distanced from them because back in the 70s, when it was proper football, there was no internet, there was no Sky, no anything. So he did kind of become a bit disassociated with Fiorentina. Now, he would say he still supports them, but I don't think he could name a player these days. But yeah, so it's the northern part of Italy.
Okay, and the old ultras—they're the blokes that walking around stabbing opposition fans in the bum, isn't it?
They have a reputation for that. That's the Lazio fans who are perhaps the most irriducibile, who are perhaps the most right wing, and they do have fascist connotations, and they do have some. You know, Paolo Di Canio once did the fascist salute to them, but the Fiorentina ultras—they are. They can be as dramatic, but they're not quite as right wing. They're you know, Tuscany is the heart of Italy. It's where they educated the Romans, that my dad likes to say. So they're a bit more cultured from there.
And just one final question on that. Mm. All I ever hear, or certainly growing up, was as much as the English and, you know, British, whatever, love their football. I always heard, well, yeah, but in Italy, it's like a religion. It's literally like a religion. I was like, how can you be more into football? But is that the case?
Yeah, I don't. You know, they're just as passionate about their football. They care about it just as much as we do. It's just the Italians have a way of making everything seem a little bit more dramatic. Like, could have been manager Antonio Conte. You just watch him on the sideline, and there's a big difference between how he reacts and someone like Graham Potter reacts to a foul or a bad call.
Yeah, although I was once reminded, and it's similar to your name, the great Italian that managed Palace about 20 years ago, Lombardo.
Attilio Lombardo,
he's quite cool.
He was a very good player. The Bald Eagle was his nickname.
Yeah, fantastic player. Played for Palace, wow, and managed them, player manager at one point. Anyway, let's talk about Tottenham. We're going to get into the questions in a minute. But there's two sort of massive things that everyone's talking about at the moment, which we'll do quickly, and we'll have your views. So first things first, Daniel Levy, the manager, the situation, the club. Now, I got a little bit of insight today. I spoke to a friend of mine who knows a friend who knows a friend who said,
Hold up. Are you going to drop some ITK here? Am I going to be the first to hear it? Go on. Let me sit down properly.
I'm really good at this. What I normally do is I normally message Jason on who does the last word on Spurs. And I sort of say, here's a bit of info for you, but don't tell anyone, hoping that he'll say it on the last word on Spurs, but he never does. But here we go. A little bit of ITK is okay. The fact that he reckons that the reason we haven't got a manager, or the reason that we're not hearing anything, is they are doing a major reshuffle, mm-hmm. including, press officers and people like that. They're basically making loads of changes. So that's the little bit of ITK I've got. But what's your view on the whole circus at the moment?
Well, they're bringing in the Juventus general manager, Paratici, who's going to come in and hopefully change how Spurs have been doing their business.
100%?
He is coming in. He'll be here next week. So that's official.
Okay.
I think he's got a reputation that he's built up over the last 10 years or so. Working in Italy first under Sampdoria, then at Juventus. And he's had some successes for sure. But there are question marks about whether or not he's the actual brains behind Juventus's resurgence. But I think the more footballing decisions that are taken from Daniel Levy, the better it's got to be for Tottenham, though.
Yeah. And in terms of your stance on that, then, are you up the club, blue flares, not trousers, with banners, Levy out, I don't care who comes in type person? Are you he's trying his best, or are you somewhere in the middle?
I did go to the protest because I thought I should go and see what they were doing, go and see the protest, and not like pay my respects, but out of curiosity, and because I do think Levy needs to be held accountable for some of the decisions he's made over the years. I think if Levy was in charge of Levy, he probably would have sacked himself by now because of the failures that he's had, and there's the whole Stratford debate, the European Super League. So I felt right to go and have a look at the protest, but I didn't take part. I wasn't in the middle of it, singing songs and lighting flares. But I did watch and, pay my respects to it.
Do you tweet Enoch out?
No, I don't tweet Enoch out because I don't think another organisation would come in and make different decisions in terms of European Super League. I think to keep Tottenham, if the European Super League is going to happen, I think for the benefit of Tottenham, we probably need to be in it. Just as we were one of the founding members of the Premier League, I think it makes good business sense to be in it rather than cut aside. So, yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. Yeah, so I think with the European Super League, I can understand why Daniel Levy wanted to do it, because had he not done it, we would have been left behind. It doesn't mean that I agree with it, but it's one of those things that modern football keeps shifting and keeps changing. And either you change with it or you get left behind. And Spurs, we were one of the founding members of the Premier League. We were really heavily involved in that. Sugar was helping pull all the strings. And had we not been there, had we not been at the table, then maybe we'd have lost out on something. So I think it's the same with the Super League, that we need to be involved. Otherwise, we risk being totally, totally cut adrift from the biggest clubs in Europe.
Okay, mate. So the other question is the big one, which is Kane. So a few podcasts have sort of said, yeah, is he leaving? Does he need to leave? All this. And what's frustrated me most is you switch on Sky, and it's been this way for weeks and weeks and months, if not years, where around the panel and they all go, yeah, he needs to leave. And that's it. And that's the end of the conversation. I've said this many times. But when you boil it down, and when you talk about it and you get through all the details with another a fellow Spurs fan, you can sort of, you know, it's not a done deal. What do you reckon?
I mean, there's two ways we can look at this. We can look at the fact that Tottenham Hotspur are a terrible club at selling players at the right time. We've become a club that used to sell our best players at the peak moment where their value was the highest. We saw that with Berbatov, we saw it with Kyle Walker, we saw it with Carrick. But then all of a sudden that stopped, and we stopped selling players, and that meant our investment got worse. So you can look at it that he's an exceptional forward with dodgy ankles who's 28 years old. He's never going to be worth more than he is now. So maybe financially we should sell him. But then, of course, the Tottenham Hotspur fan inside me says, no, we can't sell Kane. So I guess it comes down to what it means for Kane the individual. Does Kane, he wants a new challenge. You can't get a bigger challenge in football than winning a cup at Tottenham Hotspur. That's the impossible quest. So it's going to be down to his personal choice. I hope he stays, because he's a brilliant player and he means a lot to me. But you know, you're an old supporter. I'm an old supporter. We've seen fantastic players leave us, and that's football. They do leave us. I hope he stays, but yeah, it's really complicated. There's cold-hearted, yes, sell him, 150 million, rebuild the team, or no, let him stay and die at Tottenham Hotspur at 35 years old. I don't know. How do you feel about this?
Well, what happens with me, and I don't know if this is the same with you and the listeners, is that you know, I've just been to a couple of barbecues over the last couple of weeks, and West Ham fan comes up to you and it goes, finished above you in the league. And, you know, you get through that. That's normal. That's normal banter. We do it to, we did it to Arsenal fans a couple of years ago. And you know, the banter fly, you know, even the Chelsea fan, you got a little bit of banter back, not much, but you got a little bit, but by saying that Abramovich isn't even allowed in the country, and, you know, you play on that. You know, and the corruption and everything, and the same with City to a certain extent with the fact that they're owned by. Anyway, by the by, with West Ham fans, and whoever else, you know, they come up to you and they go, Kane's leaving, and you go, right, okay, and you try and get into the ins and outs of it, and of course they're not interested. It's Kane's leaving, and that's it, and that's all they want to say. But I've thought about it, and I've said it on previous pods that, you know, if yes, okay, Kane wants to leave. Well, 99% of players want to leave the current club they play for, and they want to play for Manchester City, because Manchester City are brilliant. They've got all the best players. However, then you've got Chelsea as well. So you look at it and you go, right, so it's those two clubs look as if they're going to be dominating for the next couple of years. United, well, they're off the pace, in my opinion, and you can leave to join the biggest club in the world if you want to, but if you want to join to win trophies, then it's City or Chelsea. If you join Chelsea, you will almost definitely win trophies, but it's another Sol Campbell situation. And Sol Campbell, of course, came out this week and said, I can't believe the Spurs fans are still upset with me. Well, listen, mate, you know, what, rightly or wrongly, whatever you did, and I'm not a boo boy. I'm not someone that if I ever met Sol Campbell would be horrible to him. Of course I wouldn't. I'd say hello and, you know, I don't want to, you know, break bread with the guy, but, yeah. You know, I wouldn't be horrible to him because I'm an adult. I'm not going to go on social media and do it. But that is what fans do. So if he wants to go to Chelsea and from the age of 28 years old to the day he dies, be absolutely hounded and abused, then that's the choice he makes. He'll have no doubt a few trophies, but he will be absolutely, you know, refused entry back into YR Lane by us fans. Or go to City, you know, but it's got to be, does City want him? And have they got the money? Or do they wait till next summer when he'll probably be half the price? Because a three-year contract is a hell of a lot different to a two-year contract. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think it comes down to Kane deciding. He could do something exceptional at Tottenham. He could become our greatest ever player, our top goal scorer, and he could do something which will go for generations and generations. Your son will tell his son, who will tell his son about this player called Harry Kane that did amazing things at Tottenham Hotspur. Or he could go to Man City and just become a footnote on the stuff that they do. And it's up to Kane whether he wants that. I hope he stays.
But is it up to Kane though, Bardi? Because what if he says, I want to join City, but City go, well, we can't afford 150 million. Because it's down to, Levy won't say, oh, do you know what? They've offered 100 million and I think you deserve to go. So away you go, Kane. No, for all of Levy's downfalls, he's not sentimental and he's not thoughtful like that. He'll go, you can go, but my goodness, they're going to have to pay the money. And if they don't pay the money, Levy will not accept it.
Yeah, so Kane stays, he runs down his contract and we get three more years of Harry Kane, which he'll be 31 then. And then, you know, with the grace of God, he can go wherever he wants. I hope we don't sell him. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think anyone's got the money to buy him.
So I think
he's going to stay, and I don't think he'll kick up a fuss this year. I think he'll wait and see, and he'll give us one more year, kind of like what Luka did and what Gareth Bale probably should have done.
Yeah, and what Messi, don't forget, last season, he actually, in quotations, I want to leave Barcelona. Yeah. And don't forget that Rooney told Fergie twice that he wanted to join City, if we've all got good memories, which I have. So, you know, Modric, these days, you speak to a Spurs fan, you say he's the greatest ever midfielder, you say that, most of them say Modric. I can't do it because I remember he wanted to join Chelsea. So,
But he didn't. He went to Real Madrid and he keeps his legacy intact. Because, Steven Gerrard wanted to join Chelsea. It does happen when that much money's thrown around.
Listen, mate, it's interesting times. Have you got a view on who you want the next manager to be?
I was all in on Antonio Conte. I thought that would have been great. There's never been many good Italian... Well, hasn't been a good Italian player at Spurs in my time, so it would have been great to have a really, really good Italian manager to get behind.
Well, let's name them. Let's name the Italians. Come on.
Well, there's Tramezzani, obviously. Yeah. There's Nicola Berti, who was really underrated. He was a fantastic player who joined us when his legs had gone, but he helped keep us up that year. And then, of course, there's Carlo Cudicini. Is the other Italian. That's the three of them. I don't think there's any more. So it's not a great legacy of Italian players.
Was it Bardi's Brainbusters? Was that one of the things?
Oh, you know, Steve. You know it's Bardi's Brainbusters. He's just waiting for me to talk about the day in the live show when you beat Thelonious. I know you.
I wasn't going to mention it.
Oh, yeah. Bardi's Brainbusters?
Yeah, now I know that you were there that night because...
I was asking the questions.
and forgive me for if this is bringing up old times, but I remember it was by Bardi's Brainbusters, but also I spent much of the evening chatting to a young Colombian girl.
That was my well, there was two. There was her and her friend, but my wife is Colombian. It might have been her.
Right, there you go. So I didn't want to bring up bad memories, but lovely chat we had. Right. So let's get into the questions then. As we go through, if anything else springs to mind, let me know. By the way, were you a founding member of the Fighting Cock?
No, I wasn't. I joined originally as a blogger. That was my trade. I used to write. I never wanted to go anywhere near a microphone. And I think after about 2.5 years of blogging for them and editing articles for them, I guess they run out of guests, and Flav asked me on, and I appeared on the podcast, and then I started doing it regularly after that. It's a lot easier to talk than it is to write. Plus, I started getting busier at work and changing jobs, and I couldn't spend all day blogging and editing anymore.
And just one more on the Fighting Cock. What's it like when you're all together, not necessarily doing the pod, but I presume you've had nights out together? What's that like?
It's great. It started off really strange, just like friend people you knew on the internet, and you kind of got brought together by the same kind of beliefs on Tottenham and the same kind of things of how you should support. But over the years now, it's been nine years, they've become some of my best friends, you know, and I enjoy spending time with them. The reason why I probably renewed in down to a large part is because I get to see Thelonious when I go to the stadium, and it's great to hang out with him. Alex came to my wedding. He traveled halfway across the world to come to my wedding. And, you know, and Windy calls me his sidekick and best friend on the Extra Inch. And he is genuinely one of my best friends. So it's great. And I do miss podcasting with him in person. Skype is good, and it means you can kind of crack on with your day and everything. But it's not the same as sitting there drinking beers and looking into their eyes as someone saying something they shouldn't. It's I do miss seeing them.
Yeah. Windy's the new non-executive board member, isn't he?
No, he wishes. He wishes he had that power. The only person he has loads of power over is me, and he likes to think up tasks for me to do, and he wishes he had that kind of power at Spurs. I honestly think we'd probably be a better run club if he was on the board, but no, he's not on the board. That rumour's ridiculous.
Hang on a minute. Doesn't he want no trophies but 10 more years of Poch? I'm only joking, and we're not going to go there.
No, and that was taken out of context, but no.
Of course it was. Now, look, I'm blaming it on me because it is me. I've got a dodgy internet connection, but if we get cut off, then we'll carry on tomorrow or whenever, and we'll get all this done. But we've got to get these questions done because this is the fun bit. So, first of all, what's the first match you ever remember seeing?
So, I've been thinking about this, and I didn't get into football until quite late. So it was 89. So I was already 8-9 years old. But I think the first match I got dragged to was a Charity Shield game at Wembley. Perhaps Liverpool were playing, because my cousins came down from up north, because my mum's side of the family is from the north of England. But my first Spurs game was the 91 Charity Shield Tottenham against Arsenal, which was finished 0-0. And back in those days, there was no penalty shootout, and you had to they shared the cup, they shared the shield at the end, and it was an amazing experience, because obviously going through the 88-89-90 season, Italia 90, and then obviously winning the FA Cup in 91, and everything that happened with Gaza, you know, what more do you want as a young boy, like a young impressionable Spurs fan, to see Gaza, Lineker, all these people? But obviously Gaza was injured for their Community Shield, which was heartbreaking. But yeah, that was my first Spurs game, the 91 Charity Shield final.
Okay. And have you been at a football match and it's made you cry?
No, I haven't been. Football's made me cry a few times. Most recently was obviously the Champions League run. I wasn't at the game, but I was at the social with one of the Fighting Cock socials down in Waterloo. And when we beat Ajax, it kind of all got to me. The whole kind of reaching the Champions League final, that it's been a dream for so long. And for it to actually happen in such dramatic circumstances, it was a little bit too much. And then I went over to Madrid for the final, couldn't get tickets, but I wanted to be there. And it was the whole build up to it was really emotional. So I think most recently it's been Spurs that have made me cry. And that whole Champions League run was really emotional and really draining, because we were out, then we were back in, and then the final was over in 12 seconds.
PBA it was, and people remind me that we were out many times, because we were out until Moura scored against Barcelona.
Yep.
We were out when we got drawn against Dortmund, because they all said that you're going out.
Yep.
And we, if you remember rightly, the first half we were dreadful, and then we won the first one 3-0.
Well, even if you drag it back all the way to the home game against PSV at Wembley, we were losing up until the 80-something minute when Llorente came on and Kane scored one bundled goal and then scored another one. And against Inter, we were drawing at Wembley and Inter were going through and we were going out, and then Eriksen scored in the final 10 minutes. That was an unbelievable Champions League run, which had a lot of luck, but a lot of heart with it as well.
Yeah. I mean, some people on Twitter think that we're the only team that's ever got to a final by luck. But of course, every team needs a bit of luck, and we certainly did. And unfortunately, we got no luck in the final, and we haven't had any luck in virtually every semi-final and final we've got to in the last 13 years or whatever. Nice to get a bit of luck once again. Maybe play a Hull in a final would be nice, I always say.
Which is what, of course,
Arsenal did.
Or relegated Aston Villa would be nice. Yeah. But they did play...
With Tim Sherwood as their manager.
They did play a relegated Birmingham City, and they lost the League Cup final in comical circumstances. So it does come around and bite them in the arse sometimes.
That is the next question. What is the funniest match you can remember?
For Spurs,
that's certainly up there. That Birmingham game was certainly up there.
I'm looking back now. One of the worst games, which now I look at it and it makes me laugh, is, I don't know if you remember, in 2002, there was a World Cup game between Italy and South Korea, and Moreno was the referee from Paraguay. And he's now serving time in prison for smuggling heroin. So you can kind of see what kind of character he is. And he gave one of the worst examples of refereeing in modern football you ever see. And it was completely bent and it was completely corrupt. And he knocked Italy out of the World Cup. And every now and then I like to search it on YouTube to relive the misery. And it makes me laugh at how he was able to get away with that.
Let me do the other side of the coin then. So the World Cup was in Japan and Korea, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the famous World Cup that none of us got to see, because all the matches were either on at 1 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock or 9 o'clock when we had to go to work.
Yeah.
So you actually had to get a day off work or a morning off at least to watch a match. And I remember Michael Owen scoring a goal against Brazil. And having to go into work later on that day. But all the other games, you know, the games that you wouldn't have a day off for, you know, you just miss them all because they all happen during the night.
Yeah.
So but I do remember, wasn't the goal scorer for Korea playing for Juventus and they sold him?
He was playing for Perugia, and the chairman of Perugia, who his name escapes me, but he's quite a character. He sacked him the same day. He says, "You'd never have done anything like that for me, so I'll fire you." He's also the same chairman who signed Gaddafi's son and signed Gaddafi's son to be part of the squad. And he tried to sign a female footballer and play her in Serie A to be the first lady to play in the men's game. So he does have a reputation for eccentric decisions.
Well, that's, how weird is that? I was listening to Josh Widdicombe's podcast today, the 90s podcast, and they mentioned about Gaddafi's son.
Mm.
And he played for them and he played for Chesterfield or something.
Maybe. Jay Buford.
Although they made that up for comic effect. But
Jay Boothroyd did a podcast talking about him, and he would just turn up in private jet, and he would just like hand people bits and loads of money, and he would just whisk them all away for parties and everything. He was quite a character, and apparently he had a good first touch, but he was never really going to make it.
What's the worst football match you ever saw?
There's been some stinkers at White Hart Lane.
What, the old White Hart Lane that we knocked down where all our dreams and memories were, and now we've got to sit in this soulless bowl and it's rubbish? And yeah, I thought every match that we have ever watched was amazing at White Hart Lane. Or maybe no, that's just people on Twitter.
There's been some awful games. I think some of the ones which really hurt the most is when you've gone from a high. So for example, in the Harry Redknapp days, you'd go from a Champions League game, which was really like kind of exciting and Gareth Bale doing Gareth Bale things. And then you'd go back to White Hart Lane and you'd lose 1-0 to Wigan and Roger Jager would score. Or you'd play Everton and then they would just double up on Bale and it would be 0-0. And you'd just end up going from that real kind of high point to just misery. And, I think the worst was probably the 7-2 against Bayern Munich after being in the Champions League final the year before, going out and signing a couple of good midfielders and thinking we could do something. I'm playing the first 30 minutes quite well against Bayern, going one up and perhaps should have gone two or three up. Then to just get absolutely walloped 7-2, that was heartbreaking. Kind of puts in our place.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And it was such a funny, just a strange thing. And of course, you know, rumours that Poch could still come back. And, you know, I'm probably similar to you, 50-50 on that. Or maybe you're completely a no-no. But, you know, again, we've all got little snippets of ITK and the people that I know around the club just said he just completely lost interest. After that Champions League final, the atmosphere when they all come back after the summer was completely different. And they were happy they were happy to see him go because he rubbed off on the players and the atmosphere had completely changed. However, they were doubly happy when Jose went because they said that the atmosphere immediately picked up. So whatever you think of Poch and Jose, the mood for the last 2 years has been pretty atrocious. And is that normal for a team that gets in the Champions League and loses it? Well, probably not, because Liverpool didn't feel like that. But you know, maybe they're going through it now. I don't know. What is your view on Poch, by the way? Definitely no or 50-50? What do you think?
He's a good manager, and I wouldn't mind him coming back. But I probably think it's a bit too soon for him. I would like the squad to have been flushed a little bit. He's going to come back to majority of the same players. So let's give it to someone else. Let's cycle through these players. Let Pochettino grow as a manager and as an individual. Let him actually achieve something at PSG before we start calling him home again.
I think that's right. I think that's right. However, if you know, if you read that he's coming back, you know, especially at the moment, when it's like, is the end in sight? Is there a manager? I mean, people are saying no to Martinez.
No. I Martinez is one of the managers that would make me not renew. Obviously, I've renewed now. It's too late. But I really don't want Martinez.
Yeah, but what if he wins the Euros with Belgium?
That won't change my opinion of him. Belgium are a fantastic team. And I don't think in international football, there's not that much coaching or day-to-day coaching that you can do to affect the team. You just need to be able to manage the players and figure out a formation that works for you. So I don't think an international manager convinces me. I would like to see them do something sustained at a club, or at least come to Spurs with a bit of a philosophy. Someone like Potter, I'd rather Potter than Martinez.
Yeah, rather 17th Brighton than manager of the Euros.
As crazy as that sounds, yeah, I think so. Because there's a lot to admire with Potter. I'm not saying he's like the golden child and that we should go out and get him. I think he probably needs a middle club in between us. But I do admire what he does. I like the way he talks about football. He beat Arsenal with a bunch of trash can men. So Yeah, because he, yeah. So let's. I would back him. Yeah.
I mean, I'll back anyone at this point. Whoever comes in, you know, just get behind them and see what we get. You know, we're not selling the club until we get a buyer. There's no bids as far as we know. And I'm trying to, you know, argue with people on Twitter about it. But, you know, if the guy that Spotify comes out and says, I want to buy Arsenal, why can't we have some, you know, the head of Zuckerberg or whoever come out and say, well, I fancy buying Spurs. Because I tell you what, the minute that we get a buyer who says, I'm going to put a bid of two billion in, I'll be up there with you, Bardi, chanting and eek out. But in my opinion, how can you get rid of a chairman when there's no one else to come in and buy it? But, you know, people tell me that they don't need to name a buyer as well. But I think you do, for me anyway. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I'm just saying there's no alternative at the moment. I think Enoch are in place. What I would like is, I know we joked earlier about Windy sitting on the board, but some fan representation on the board, at least so the club will acknowledge our existence and just stop looking at us as cash cows and client reference
tea.
Numbers.
What about T? Let's have T.
No, he'd no, be good, wouldn't he? He's far too impatient. He would never do it. He'd just end up flipping the board table. Keep T out of him.
Okay, all right. We might come back to that later. What about? Have you been at a football match and it scared you?
I went to a game in Colombia. I went to watch. It was the Medellin derby, so Atletico Nacional against Independiente Medellin, and I wasn't in with the ultras because I was with my wife and some friends, but we were sat on the kind of tribuna, which is the side of the oval, and out of nowhere a supporters group of the same team came in and they just started fighting with the same supporters. So they all supported the same team, but they were just supporters groups from different towns. It was almost like Chicago Spurs and New York Spurs arriving at the football stadium at the same time and having some beef, and it kicked off between them. I mean, everyone supported the same team and they were chucking things and, yeah. You know, it was quite exciting, but it's one of those situations where when you're with someone you care about, you're rather than getting caught up in the situation and enjoying it, you're worried about their safety. So that's probably the closest I've come to like proper football violence. Ricky would have loved it.
Oh yeah, of course he would have. But we're talking levels here of how much you support your team. Again, my impression of fans that go to watch their team in Colombia, again, absolutely passionate as you like. Am I right?
Yeah, and the thing is that no one travels really because there's no infrastructure like here. You can't just jump on Virgin Rail and go from one city to the other city because the country's just not designed like that. So back in those days, this was 2009, you really had to care. So if you came all the way from Bogota, which was like 400 kilometers away, you really had to care about your team. And when they arrived there, the first thing they did was kick off with their other fan group. So that's proper. That's proper hardcore fans.
Wow. Okay. And what about a player that you used to love but you don't anymore?
As you know, I like a hill. I like to pick a player and then just defend him and then just put all my effort into defending him. So I was all in on Paulinho. I thought, and I still stand by him.
He
could have been good. He was a box-to-box player. And I defended him. And looking back now, perhaps I shouldn't have, because it still gets brought up in my mentions every now and then. So he's a player that I really had a soft spot for. And if you look back at his first season, eight goals, here, including some big goals that won us games. Cardiff away springs to mind. And so he did some good things in that first season, but then he start doing some stupid and bad things. And he brought a lot of pain to me.
Yeah. He, I had an Arsenal fan on the pod back in those days. Mm. And I said to him, and we were going to play each other. And I said, you know, and we went through the team and I was like, you know, this player, this player, this player. And then we got to Paulinho. And he said, you know, what's he up to? And I said, oh, I tell you what, he's going to get stuck in. He's going to run his butt off. He's a Brazilian international. He just played in that Copa America, I think, which they'd won.
Confederations Cup.
And he was something like that. And he was player of the tour, whatever. But he was great and he was dynamic. And I said, honestly, he was dreadful. And I was like, oh, maybe not then. Oh, dude.
But he still had his moments. He had his moments. He ended up, obviously, we know he went to China, but then he ended up at Barcelona, a little bit of money laundering perhaps involved. But he still played for Brazil. He still went to both World Cups. I think he even went to 2014. He went to 2018. He had pedigree. He could have been something, but it was all wrong for him. And it just Spurs never worked
out. I don't know about you, but when you try and name the famous seven that we bought with the Bale money, he's always the one that I forget. But one of the guys that we did buy with the Bale money was Chadley. And I can't believe this. He's actually in the Belgium squad.
Yep.
He might end up lifting the Euros.
He could. Because I think he's so versatile. I think he even plays up front for them now as an alternative to Lukaku. Yeah.
I like him. I've always liked him, but obviously we sold him several years ago. Where's he now? Is he back in Belgium playing?
No, I think he's in Turkey.
Is he? Right. What about a player? Right. So you've defended Paulinho. What about a current player who everyone's going, oh, he's rubbish. You've got to get rid of him. Is there anyone that you say, no, actually, I reckon we could still see something from him? Don't say it's Lamella.
No. I think that Lamella's been here long enough now. How many more chances does he need? I still have a lot of faith in Davinson. I still think there's a defender there in him. I think he needs a partner that works for him. And I think he needs an operating defensive midfielder in front of him that works. But I still think out of all of our defenders...
Is that Colombian bias there?
No. I do like Big Dave. I think he's better than Dyer, who's awful. He's better at centre back than Davies. Alderweireld's on his way out, and I think out of the lot of them, I would rather invest a little bit of time and faith in Sanchez.
Do you know what's interesting? I was talking to someone today again, like as well as Chadley, Vertonghen, who's also obviously left, and Toby, who's on his way out. All three potentially are going to win the Euros. And it's just the Tottenham way, isn't it? That we and we don't want their manager, and all
but then
we're so entitled. Come on,
but yeah, I mean, you seem pretty confident. Is Belgium your tip for the Euros? Then is that who you're going to back?
No, I've got France in the sweepstake. But here's my prediction for that, and I said it on the last show as well, that I think Sissoko will end up playing in the final, and he'll be one of the ones lifting the cup. Because I don't think he'll start the tournament, but because of the position that he plays and suspensions and injuries, I think he'll end up playing in the final and lifting it.
Probably. He had a crack in Euro 2016. He was one of France's best players then. And Sissoko has his uses.
Yeah, yeah. What about a favourite football match?
So Tottenham-wise, I think... Obviously, the 91 semi-final against Arsenal, as a 10-year-old boy, just kind of that has an effect on you that for the rest of your life you can't shake. It's one of those memorable matches, and you hear people talk about it a lot. But for me, it was one of those games that just changed everything, how I looked at football. It just was the romantic thing of Gazza smacking in the ball like that, the Hummel kit, the Holston kit. So for me, it was a life-changing match. In my adult life...
Were you there?
No. I mean, my dad doesn't support Tottenham, and he was just... He would never take me to those games, and it just wasn't in his way to take me to go and watch Spurs. Spurs was something I had to start to do as an adult or rely on friends' fathers to take me. So yeah, no, that wasn't there. What do I need to be? Do I need to have been at this match, or just we're talking about?
No, it's just your favourite match. And I mean, but let's set the scene a little bit. So how old were you?
10 years old. So when we played.
So you're 10.
Yeah.
Where Spurs kit on.
So I was actually I was in the Cubs, and for some reason I was trying to get my chess badge, and I ended up at a chess tournament on the day of the semi-final, and I was like, Mum, I don't want to be here. And she was like, no, you've committed now. This is a life lesson for you. So I went to this chess tournament and I tried to lose as many games as possible to immediately get knocked out. And I ended up in a game where if you won, you would go through to the next round. And I ended up against another Spurs fan. And you could see the two of us were like, both of us wanted to lose. Both of us wanted to get out. I think I won by default, but then I got out of there the next game. And then back home in time to put the full kit on and watch the game. And my next door neighbour was a Spurs fan at the time. And I lived in Mill Hill, very close to the A41. So you'd get people going back from Wembley up the A41. And my neighbour, who was a lot older than me, was a Spurs fan. And we went out and we grabbed our things and we were like waving to people coming back from Wembley. It was an incredible experience.
Okay, next question. What is your favourite country?
It's difficult. I love England. I was born in England, and I, even though I see myself as Italian in a lot of things, I do see myself as English, and I understand the privilege I have of living here. So I do love England as a place to live. I don't think I would rather live anywhere else. I don't think as like to work and live, I think England is the best country to live in. But you know, I love Italy. I love Spain. I've got a deep fondness for Colombia, but I think let's just go with Italy's too easy. I'm going to go France. I spent last summer, we did a late honeymoon, and we rented a camper van so we would stay away from airplanes and hotels and everything else for COVID reasons. And me and my wife, we hired a camper van and did a 23-day journey around France. We did the whole lap of it, west coast, east coast, north coast, and it's a fantastic place with fantastic food, fantastic alcohol, and great setup for going around in a camper van. So I'm gonna go France. Gonna go a little bit different.
Get involved with the French cuisine.
French cuisine is great. On the west coast, we had some Arcachon. We had some fantastic white wine and oysters. On the south coast, some great beef, and then on the border with the Swiss, with the lakes and everything else, some fantastic cheese. And it's a fantastic country that has a little bit of everything. No matter what you're into, you'll find it in France.
No snails or frog's legs?
I'll eat snails and frog's legs. I don't eat marmalade. That's the only thing I won't go near.
Marmalade?
Yeah. I had a bad experience as a child. One of my earliest memories was putting my hand in a jar of marmalade and then getting it on my hands and on my face and up my nose and up my ass probably. And I just haven't been able to eat marmalade since.
Confessions, brilliant. Not Colombia.
No, it's a wonderful country, but it's a bit far away. You know, it's a bit far. You can't really just pop to Colombia.
Is Colombia a country where they eat guinea pig, or is that just Peru?
No, they do eat it in some places, but only in certain towns. But it's more of a Peruvian thing.
I love food, and I love different countries. Colombia, you go to a traditional Colombian restaurant? Yep. What you got on the menu? Beef?
Yeah, it'll be meat, rice, beans, plantain is the kind of bandeja paisa is the traditional dish, but it's a lot of meat and a lot of rice.
Yeah, all right, mate. Who's your most hated football player?
I mean, I hated Van Persie. There was something about him that just got on me, and I couldn't deal with that. Van Persie, Fabregas, I never liked him either. Jack Wilshere, even though I respect Jack Wilshere, I don't like him either. And there's a whole kind of group of those Arsene Wenger Arsenal players, which I really dislike, just the ones that embody Arsene Wenger and just remind me of how bad we were at our time. I let Henri go. I don't have too much hate for him. Don't like Pires at all. I hate Wiltord. Wiltord. He scored the goal that equalised against Italy in the Euro 2000 final, and he plays for Arsenal. Don't like him.
Okay, that's the first time we've had him. And what football team do you hate the most?
It's Arsenal. Sometimes I wonder, like, my hatred for Arsenal. I mean, I really hate Tottenham Hotspur. I said on the Extra Inch that my hatred for Tottenham Hotspur is only defeated by my love for Tottenham Hotspur. And I don't think, I think I love them so much and I think I hate them so much that I've just found this balance where I can't live without them. And I explained it that there's this scene in The Simpsons where Mr. Burns, they try to show Mr. Burns how he's dying from everything, but because he's dying from everything at once, he can't die. He's like impossible to be killed. And that's Tottenham. I hate Tottenham so much that I love them, and I've found this balance between them. But I also hate Arsenal. Come on, you've got to. I don't hate Chelsea like I hate Arsenal. I dislike Chelsea, but I properly hate Arsenal. And there's no one else really that I have the same kind of hatred towards.
But do you just hate Tottenham now, or is it like just because social media and because of the manager situation and because we haven't won a trophy and because blah blah blah, did you go to the Champions League final thinking, God, I hate Tottenham?
No, of course not. I don't hate Tottenham in the sense that I hate them, like I think they're bad. But sometimes you know, when you look at them, you're like, if they didn't exist. If I didn't support Tottenham Hotspur, if I removed football from my life, like go there and have football just sucked out my brain, would I feel as angry or as upset all the time like I do? Because sometimes I look at my wife, and Spurs have just lost, and she's just like, oh, they lost, and she's like that, switched off, doesn't matter, she can just get on with her things. Well, I'm probably like you. You're like, but we lost. And I sometimes wonder what life would be like if I didn't have that. I'm sure something else would just fill that void. But can you imagine just switching off that sensor and then just living your life without being concerned or worried about this beast that is Tottenham? You must ponder that, no?
All the time. And most recently, you know, I'm waking up in the morning just going, you know, my first thought is, did we win yesterday? And I'm like, oh, we didn't even play. And then I know tomorrow morning I'll wake up and I'll go, Spurs. Oh, no, we didn't play. And then when we beat Leicester on the last day of the season, you know, it didn't mean very much. But I was like, yes, I go into work today and the Arsenal fan doesn't get to come up to me and say, ha, ha. You know, he attempted to with the whole, ha, ha, you're in the Conference League. And I was like, listen, you, without a doubt, with 10 minutes to go on the last day, you know, last day of the season, you were leaping around your front room and, and you were gutted when they didn't give Harry Kane go. And he was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. So, it consumes me. I know it does Ricky as well. He says, you know, it just goes round and round in his head constantly. And it really does with all of us. And that's the trouble. And I was speaking to my dad the weekend. And I said, oh, these people on Twitter, Dad, and people coming up to me constantly, West Ham fans and everything. Ha ha. And he says, well, don't worry about it. Just don't entertain it. That's the trouble. You entertain it. And I was like, you're absolutely right. But I can't stop.
But it's not even social media sometimes, because if we have a bad result, I may just step away from social media. It's like in my head that we lost, and it can affect my mood for the rest of the weekend. And that's not a healthy place to be in, Steve. You know, we should be enjoying we should be enjoying our family. But this thing, Tottenham, that I have no control of, has the ability has the ability to affect my weekends, and that's not good.
Let's go back to the fun stuff. We're nearly done, mate. Here we go. Favorite ever player.
I'm not going to say Kane, because in 3 weeks he may have left us and gone. But I think it's probably between Gazza and Waddle and Paul Allen. Those three were Those three were the players that had the biggest impact on me growing up. Chris Waddle was an incredible, incredible player who gifted with both feet, could score all kinds of goals. He would score left, long range tap-ins. I remember him scoring headers as well. And when he left, that was gut-wrenching. And back then, like, I was a young boy, I didn't realise he'd left until I saw it on BBC News one morning, and they said the Tottenham and England player Chris Waddle has gone to join Marseille, and you're like, what? How did that happen? So I think Chris Waddle, Gazza, and Paul Allen, because Paul Allen, I met him when I was a young boy. My mum took me to a sports shop to meet him in Millhill Broadway. And it's like him and my mum gave me Tottenham Hotspur. So I always have a soft spot for him.
Lovely, lovely. What about your favourite ever manager?
It's got to be Pochettino. I do. He's been the best manager of my lifetime. I was too young to remember Birkinshaw, so I can't say him. I had a soft spot for Venables, but that was a childhood thing, and then growing up, everything else that went along with Venables. So it has to be Pochettino. He gave us 5-6 years of some incredible football, some incredible highs. He took Tottenham to a level which we hadn't seen before in my lifetime. So without doubt, it's Pochettino.
And you, what about a legendary player who comes to mind? Doesn't have to be Tottenham.
My favourite ever player is probably Roberto Baggio. Because as I mentioned before, my dad and I, we don't share Tottenham. It's not a club that we have in common. So we have the Italian national team, and for the both of us, Baggio in 94 really cemented our football relationship. And yeah, when watching his career, sat next to my dad at the World Cups and everything else, that was a momentous, like, emotional part of my life. And there's the Netflix documentary, that Netflix film they just made of Baggio. It was nice to rewatch that and remember some of the good times. So anyway, he was a brilliant, brilliant player.
Where's he now? Is he doing commentary or anything, or is he working at a club?
No, he's relaxing, enjoying his life. He goes hunting in Argentina. He's decided not to be involved in anything with football, which is the wise thing to do. He's one of those players that, because he's played for Fiorentina, Juventus, Milan and Inter, he doesn't belong to anybody. Whereas like Del Piero belongs to Juventus, Totti belongs to Roma. He's kind of like Italy's player because you can't label him with one thing. So he enjoys that. And I think he doesn't want to get involved in the politics of working with the national team. He's quite smart to do that.
Did I see the Italian Bonucci? He's still playing for it. How old's he now?
He's 34, and Chiellini came out of retirement as well. So they'll both be in the Euros. Bonucci's been linked to Tottenham in the last few weeks.
I'll tell you who I used to love growing up was Maldini.
Mm-hmm. Absolute wonderful defender. Such a good left back, and then you could see he has just had that football brain. He moved to centre back without any kind of problems.
Yeah. Who's your favourite goalkeeper?
Growing up was Erik the Viking. I loved Torsvet, and I would kind of, because I was a goalkeeper growing up, and I would model my kind of dives on him. So Torsvet. I also love Gianluigi Buffon, obviously. He's from my dad's hometown, so there's that kind of relationship as well. My dad went to school with Buffon's mum. They were in the same class at school, and my dad says she wasn't very pretty, so no one asked her out on dates or hang out with her at the beach. But then she did end up having her child, went on to be the greatest goalkeeper of all time. So Torsvet for Tottenham, and Gigi Buffon in general.
Second best to Pat Jennings, of course.
Yeah.
What about favourite ever defender?
Sol Campbell. doing that for the soundbite. No, I think
that'll go viral. You'll be like Windy.
No. One day that we'll do like a hot take on Twitter. Who's Tottenham's greatest defender? We'll just do Sol Campbell and see what we can do. Stir up Twitter. But Ledley King was obviously one of the best defenders in my lifetime at Spurs. Yeah, so King, But I do think in more recent times, Alderweireld, who was an absolute Rolls Royce of a defender, back that partnership he had with Vertonghen was incredible. On the wider in wider football, probably Fabio Cannavaro is my all time. El Capitano is probably my favourite all time.
Okay, and who's your favourite midfielder?
Probably Gazza. I got to go with Gazza. Of course, he's got a bit of a concerning off-field antics and everything else that goes along with it. But as a young boy, Italian 90, the things he did for England and, of course, everything he did for Tottenham, scoring against Arsenal in his sock, the free kick. And then, even though I wasn't supporting England at the time, everything he did during Euro 96, he was a generational talent, which everyone talks about Foden, but I think Foden's got some way to go to be ranked alongside Gazza.
Gazza's just been on Italy's version of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, hasn't he?
He's been on Isla dei Famosi, so the island of the famous people. He's been on that. And his Italian's not bad. It's pretty good. It's... yeah. I think he's gone to the...
Did he win it?
I don't know. I don't think so. I wasn't following it. I don't think he won it. But he his Italian wasn't bad. I was very surprised.
and what about your favourite ever striker?
Going to go for... I hated him when he left, but Berbatov is one of those players that now time has passed. You can go back and you can appreciate some of the stuff he did. And I think he's a striker that I remember fondly. Gary Lineker was an incredible striker and it had an incredible influence on me. So I can't really go for Berbatov as my favourite ever striker, but I'm gonna go with Lineker as my favourite Spurs striker. And in world football, I'm gonna go for Ronaldo, the original El Fenomeno Ronaldo, the Brazilian. He was. That build up those years between 95 and 98, he was just sensational. He was an incredible, incredible striker, and he was that good that even when his knees exploded and he had to redesign himself, he came back in like the late 2000s as a penalty box poacher, and he was just unbelievable. So yeah, Ronaldo.
Fantastic. Right, one more question then. Mm-hmm. So aliens come down from Mars or okay. Some planet, and they bump into you in the street and they say, ah, you are the famous Bardi from the Bardi's Brainbusters phenomenon from several years ago when of course Steve beat T for the first time ever, though he's not been invited back on to the finals. Mind you, they've stopped doing that now. Anyway, and they say to you, right, Mr. Bardi, Tony Lombardi, you sound like you're from The Sopranos. My God, fantastic to catch up with you. Great name, by the way, Tony Lombardi. wouldn't mess with Tony Lombardi, I'll tell you that much. So they say to you, okay, Mr. Tony Lombardi, what is the best? What we've heard of this thing called football. What is football? And you say, aha, watch this match, and you give them a DVD. What football match are you giving them on that DVD, which encompasses all of football? What match are you giving them?
Well, the greatest game of the millennium is the 1970 match of Italy against Germany in Mexico, the 4-3. It's way before my time. I don't know if it's before yours, but I think it's probably way before yours as
well. When was that?
Mexico, 1970.
Okay, what? Well, not the final, obviously.
No, the semi-final between Italy and Germany in the Azteca. That was labelled the game of the century. That was an incredible football match.
Okay.
That had a little bit of everything, including lack of substitutes and proper heat. So I'd tell them to go watch that game. But I think for sheer drama, you can't beat the Ajax game. There's the second leg of the Ajax game that has a team which has nothing left to give other than just heart, and it kind of demonstrates how heart can just overcome everything. And yeah, I would send them to the 1970 game and watch the Ajax match as well, because they're two matches, one of technical skill and brilliance, the other one of just pure guts and glory and never say die attitude, which, you know, we've both been watching Spurs a long, long time, and to witness a Tottenham team that had proper bottle and just went for it is something we don't see very often. So yeah, I'm very proud of what Spurs did that night. And I said quite dourly that it doesn't matter anymore because we lost the final and that game doesn't really matter. But I think looking back after everything that's happened last year in the world, then I think we need to take joy from those moments where Tottenham just properly stood up and did something amazing. So yeah, those would be my two games.
I mean, we're going down a road now of this whole, if you don't win, there's no point. You know, I tweeted someone the other day who said about people still banging on about the Ajax game. And I said, look, listen, you know, would you have rather just gone out in the first round, not even qualified for the Champions, just finished 10th in the league, like West Ham do every year, you know, or battle relegation, stay up, do that, and just do that. And he tweeted me back, yeah, because they haven't won anything, we haven't won anything. It's the same. And I'm like, it's not the same. It's not the same.
I think we get to a point as football fans, we always have to compare ourselves to other people and to other situations. And what means something to me and you, of course, is not going to relate to a West Ham fan. They don't understand it. It would never mean what it does. It would never mean to us what it means to them. So I think they just need to just enjoy their playoff final victories to get into the Premier League all those times. And we'll think about the Champions League.
Well, that's fine, you know. But what I'm saying is, when we used to get to finals, it used to be like, great, we're in a final. And you know, when we'd lose them, it was like, oh, you know, unlucky, you lost that. And now it's bottled it.
Yeah.
You always and it's like, well, hang on a minute. Who do you support? Oh, Everton. Well, where can you turn around and say bottled it to us? You went out in the fourth round. And it's like year after year after year. And it's getting more and more. I listened to Adrian Durham today, and he said, you know, about if we don't win the Euros, then England are failures because we've got to win the thing. He always says the thing, got to win the thing. And it's like, well, we haven't been in a final since 66. When was that? 50 years ago, whatever it is? Should know that, maths teacher. but, you know, it's like, actually, if we got to the final, especially if we beat France along the way and Belgium along the way and whoever else along the way, if we get to the final and lose on penalties, you know, you know that he's got to go on radio and go, yeah, we're a bunch of failures. Well, sometimes luck goes against you. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's very difficult to win the Euros. It's very difficult to win the Premier League. It's very difficult to win the World Cup. Only one team can do it. And you need everything to fall into place at the right time. And it's extremely difficult. And yeah, I mean, if England win the Euros, I may have to move to France. I may have to figure out where's the best country to live in and just go there, because you guys will never stop talking about it.
So are you supporting Italy then?
Yeah, of course, 100%. If England win the World Cup, I'll move to Scotland and hang out with the Scots.
Really? So if Italy go out and it's England in the final, you won't support England?
No, not really. No, I wouldn't cheer them on. I wouldn't celebrate England winning. No, of course not.
Really?
Yeah, it's
what if Kane scores the winning goal and he lifts the cup up? You'll be like, not for me.
No, I mean, and then what? Then he goes to Man City with his medal. No, I hope Kane does his ACL in the first game. And then he doesn't play, does his ankle.
Maybe I'm with you. All right, mate, brilliant.
Nice one, Steve. Thank you so much. It's been great.
So where can we catch you? On the Extra Inch? Are you still doing them?
Yeah, of course. I'm part of the Extra Inch. I'm still within the Fighting Cock family, but I spend most of my time doing the Extra Inch. You can follow us at the Extra Inch, or you can join our Patreon. We have a really nice Patreon community, and we're doing great stuff behind the firewall. So please have a little look inside to see what we're doing. There's some great people in there and some great content.
Fantastic. All right, mate. So pleased we did it and the internet came back. It might be a bit jumpy, this one, but, you know, it's all good fun and we'll chat again soon. All right, matey?
Nice one, Steve.
Brilliant. Great to chat. See you later.
See ya. Nice one, Steve. Thank you very much, mate.